I really think there's like a huge story here about these consolidated behemoths that are changing the rules of the grid while we're all focused locally and at the state level.
When the going gets tough, the tough acquires more regulated assets. Back in April 2014, Exelon, the largest nuclear power generator in the nation, made a $6.8 billion bid to acquire the Washington, D.C.-based electric utility, Pepco. Over the next year and a half, multiple federal and state authorities approved the takeover, leaving only the D.C. Public Service Commission in the way of Exelon's push to become the largest electric utility in the nation. In August, the D.C. Commission unanimously rejected the merger, citing an inherent conflict of interest with D.C.'s renewable energy future. Now, just 3 months later, amid allegations of corruption, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser has settled with Exelon and the D.C. Commission has been asked to reconsider. Anya Schulman, D.C. resident, executive director of the Community Power Network and active participant in the Power D.C. Coalition, joins John Farrell this week to talk about the Exelon takeover of Pepco and what it means for energy users everywhere. This is Local Energy Rules, a podcast sharing powerful stories about local renewable energy.
You know, as a little bit of background here, you know, a lot of utilities have been using mergers to maintain profits in the light of flattening electricity sales, demand growth has slowed, and growing distributed generation. And Exelon's a perfect illustration of this. They were formed of a merger in the year 2000. They were rejected in a merger attempt with NRG in 2009, but were successful at merging with Constellation Energy and Baltimore Gas and Electric in 2012. Does this trend of Exelon seeking mergers to maintain profitability fit with the situation here in D.C. where they're trying to merge with Pepco?
Yeah, John, thanks for having me on your show. I think that in Exelon you have the same phenomenon, but also a specific phenomenon, which is that Exelon made a big bet on nuclear. They're the nation's largest owner of nuclear power. They own 23 nuclear power plants, and a bunch of things are happening in the wholesale electricity market that they didn't prepare for. One is the arrival of cheap gas and cheap wind, which are both making it very, very hard for Exelon to compete. And really, what they're responding to is, I think, not so much a decrease in overall demand, but in really a huge challenge with the competitiveness of nuclear, which not only has these new cheap competitors, but also nuclear gets more and more expensive each year. As the plants age, they require more maintenance, more upgrades, et cetera. So their power is actually getting more expensive while the competition is getting cheaper. And they're under tremendous pressure from their shareholders to diversify and find alternative streams of income beyond their wholesale power supply.
You know, a question about that is, in Illinois, where Exelon is the owner of Commonwealth Edison, which is a distribution utility, but also where many of its nuclear power plants are located, there was a big issue in the fall as they were seeking something like $1.5 billion from the Illinois legislature to prop up their nuclear power plants in the wholesale market, where they were having trouble competing, as you noted. Is the proposed merger with Pepco in some way going to help them out of this situation where they are facing so much competition for selling that nuclear power?
Yeah, so the merger will give them a new income stream, and that's really important to their shareholders. So it's going to look good on their books. It's not necessarily going to solve the problem that their power is less and less competitive each year, but it will basically diversify what's a declining and risky portfolio for them. And this whole phenomena of utilities trying to offload aging, expensive, dirty power on their ratepayers is not unique to Exelon. I just came back from Ohio this week, where the local utilities are trying to offload dirty, aging coal, which is above market prices, on our ratepayer. And we saw the same thing happen in West Virginia a year ago. So it's a new trick in the utilities handbook, and it's just stunning that they're getting away with it.
The DC case is so interesting because, of course, you've already gone through a decision process. In August, the DC Public Service Commission unanimously, if I'm not mistaken, said that this merger was not in the public interest. I want to read a few quotes from the Washington Post story about it. Quote, no, there was no evidence that the combination would improve the reliability of service. Quote, Pepco will become a second-tier company in a much larger corporation whose primary interest is not in distribution but in generation. And as you had mentioned, you know, with the nuclear power plants. And quote, there was an inherent conflict of interest that might inhibit our local distribution company from moving forward to embrace a cleaner and greener environment. And the final quote I wanted to share here is from the commission chair, Betty Ann Kane, who said, quote, the sale and change in control proposed in the merger would move us in the opposite direction from safe, reliable, and affordable distribution service. So my question here is, the commission, I think, was very clear that this merger was a bad idea, but then Exelon comes back and counteroffers to that rejection, and now all of a sudden you have the D.C. mayor saying, oh, no, we think this is a great idea. So what's new? What changed in that counteroffer that supposedly makes this deal suddenly in the public interest?
So it's a great question, John. What's really surprising to us, and when I heard that the mayor had reached a settlement, at first I was really worried, and I thought, oh my God, maybe they got some really great concessions, and it's going to be a very difficult decision for the Power DC Coalition, which represents more than 20 public interest groups across the spectrum in DC, from tenants advocates to democracy advocates to environmental groups. And then we got a look at the settlement, and we were really shocked to see how little was changed. And what, you know, the fundamentals are minor provisions in some of the details, and an increase in the kitty that they're offering, or the bribe, or whatever they call it, the customer invested fund, from $33 to $78 million. So yeah, they doubled the amount of money, but you're talking about a drop in the bucket of a $6.5 billion deal, and you're talking about under, you know, $100 million. And furthermore, half that money goes back to DC government programs that are often in the past not fully spent. So they appropriate the money, and then they don't implement them, and then they reprogram the money for other purposes. So what we've been asking is, what's really going on? Because we can't see in the settlement itself a justification, not only for the mayor to make a deal, but she managed to pressure the Office of People's Counsel, which is the ratepayer advocacy group, the apartment building lobby, which is the commercial buildings group, the water and sewer authority, which is supposed to be guarding, you know, costs for their customers. And then finally, the federal government is supposed to be looking out for taxpayer interest. The federal government is the single largest ratepayer in DC. They have over 30% of the market. And they're supporting the settlement, or in case of the GSA, they're not contesting it. And so we come to the conclusion that something else is at play here. And one of the things that happened is that 10 days before the mayor announced her flip-flop on her position and then announced the new settlement, she received a $25 million payment to the DC government for naming rights, which she used to complete the largest land deal that probably of her administration. It's a huge redevelopment on Buzzard Point. She was desperately needed the money for eminent domain to put the real estate deal together. And then comes the utility with $25 million check with almost no strings attached. It's supposedly for naming rights for an unspecified block or park somewhere in the District of Columbia. But we really have asked, well, why does a monopoly need a naming rights deal in the first place? And what company would give away $25 million without having the terms specified? And so we can only conclude that this is really about a big real estate deal where the developers who really run and own our city are making billions of dollars on land, and the utility deal is just a, for them, it's just an incidental pawn in the larger set of players on the table. So it's really been a mess. We've asked for investigations. We've done Freedom of Information Act requests. We're asking for an accountability from the mayor, but so far we haven't gotten it.
It sounds like there's a whole bunch of stuff that defies good explanation here. You have a number of city agencies, the federal government sort of changing position on the deal. But in the big picture, as you mentioned, you know, it's a $6.5 billion deal. This additional $40 million for the city is only a 0.6% shift in the total cost of the deal. I'm imagining it's also just a drop in the bucket in terms of the total revenue that Exelon will get from DC ratepayers as part of the deal. And I'm kind of curious, you're going to go back to the Public Service Commission, and their job again is to evaluate if this deal has now become in the public interest. The $40 million to the city is not going to change electric reliability. It's not going to change that Pepco is going to be a second-tier company to a larger corporation. It's not going to change the fact that it's still moving, the merger is still moving in the opposite direction, as the commission chair said, from safe, reliable, affordable distribution service. So does it make any difference, the things that they've offered in terms of the broader public interest of this merger deal?
Well, we really hope that the commission will see it exactly as you've described it. I mean, the changes are not significant. I would say that the biggest change is that there's a $25 million on-bill credit against future rate increases for residential customers. And I think that's what got the ratepayer advocacy group, you know, the People's Council on board. The rest is pretty much window dressing. So we, and all the fundamentals, the conflict of interest laid out by the commission, you know, one of the real ironies is while the, in order to sell this new settlement, Pepco and Exelon have been taking out full page ads in the Washington Post day after day after day, doing radio, hiring door-to-door canvassers, the full, you know, AstroTurf, full court press. And while they take up these big ads with a solar developer, the only solar developer in the entire region that supports the merger, and or what, the only one I know of, they're saying they love solar, they love renewables, etc. And meanwhile, they're on in DC on Capitol Hill lobbying against the investment tax credits for solar. Same week. While they're in the commission, trying to convince our commission that they support renewable energy. So, you know, the hypocrisy is just overwhelming.
Seems very efficient for them, though. I mean, if they're there to lobby against the solar anyway, you know, you're in D.C., so you might as well take the time to talk about how you really like solar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we hope. The public record closes in 2 weeks on the 23rd of December. And we're really hoping to get a lot of comments from real people. Power DC has an action alert set up, so you can just click and send in comments. But what we need at this point is unique analysis, unique comments from people that are really saying, you know, why this is a bad deal. And we'd love people from other utility territories, like in ComEd in Chicago or PECO in Philly, that have experienced Exelon and experienced their, you know, not very good service to write into our commission and just say, don't do it.
You know, in the retail space, there's a lot of time this consumer columnists for newspapers will say, well, yeah, there's 40% off, but they've just raised the retail price before they've given you the discount. So the change isn't really that much. So maybe it was a $10 shirt a week ago, and now it's a $15 shirt with 33% off, and it's still 10 bucks. So what's to stop Exelon coming in and saying, well, you've got all these credits against rate increases, so we're just going to ask for a 10% rate increase instead of a 5%?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. What one of the things that's so fascinating about it is that all the parties are assuming that there's going to be large rate increases in the next few years. They're talking about 40% in the distribution rate over the next 3 years, and they expect that this credit will basically mask these rate increases until 2019, which coincidentally is right after the next mayoral election. And then people are going to be hit with these giant bills, because since people won't be feeling the rate increases, there's not going to be the opposition that you might have seen otherwise to the rate increases. They'll slide them through the commission, slide them through with everybody, you know, nodding and winking. And then all of a sudden, you know, just after the net, mayor thinks she's going to be reelected, bam, it's like a balloon payment on your utility bill. So it's just bad policy. If we're going to have to raise rates, it should be done transparently and incrementally so people could make adjustments, like do energy efficiency or other things that they need to do to lower their bill, even if the rates go up, or add solar. So it's just, it's really like a disgusting, cynical, you know, move.
Being able to step back for this from a second, obviously you have this big fight. You have the comment period coming up in 2 weeks on December 23rd. People can go to powerdc.org and submit comments, and hopefully we'll get this out to folks who are across the country to weigh in with their perspectives. You know, if this wasn't all being precipitated by this proposed merger, what should the Public Service Commission be thinking about in terms of the public interest? You know, they're evaluating this particular deal, but what is the public interest here in a 21st century electricity system that should be on the table and as part of the consideration, you know, beyond just what they're, I think they hinted at this, you know, about, you know, this shift toward a cleaner and greener environment. But, you know, what would you say are the important components of that public interest in a 21st century electric system?
Well, you know, one of the things that's so fascinating is that in the middle of this whole mess, our Public Service Commission opened a docket on, which they call Grid 2.0. They're actually, you know, it's not as an extensive proceeding as what you're seeing in New York with the REV process, or California with the really integrated planning process, but they're trying to take a serious look at what are the opportunities and challenges of the changing technology and the need to address climate change. And so we're really excited that we are having a structured opportunity to engage with LPSC on things like locally based renewables and community solar and storage and microgrids, and how that actually might be a better pathway towards increasing reliability and reducing rates than the, you know, big expensive infrastructure projects proposed by the utilities, which really just raise rates and increase our profit more than anything else. I have one other thing, and I don't know if it fits in the interview at all, but I think because you do such sophisticated coverage of, you know, energy and how it all fits together, I think that another thing that play here with Exelon that should really concern people outside of the Pepco territory, which is I think that they're making a play for the PJM grid. If you look at where they're and where they're building their utilities, it's all within PJM. And they're very actively engaged in sort of the rulemaking at the PJM. And each time they acquire a property within the PJM, they basically increase their voting power with the PJM. And they were able to get the rules changed, and I'm not an expert on this, but they were able to get the tools changed within the PJM to get higher capacity payments, which were, this year, ended up in them getting hundreds of millions of dollars for basically just having their nukes on standby, you know, having their nukes exist in standby payments to the PJM. Raises the wholesale power price for everybody within the grid, protects their nukes. And I feel like not many people understand the rules of the PJM, but that in some ways this play is more about rolling up and controlling the regional grid and the rules of the regional grid than as much as diversifying their portfolio. And the problem is it's just so complicated. nobody understands it, and our commission feels like it's out of their scope of review. So even though we talk about these things and the capacity payments just raise rates for everybody, our commission only looks at it from inside the box of DC's regulatory. So they see wholesale energy as outside their purview and something that they only manage through our competitive, auction, the competitive process for procurement, because we're in a deregulated market. And I really think there's like a huge story here about these consolidated behemoths that are changing the rules of the grid while we're all focused locally and at the state level. They're playing at FERC and they're playing at the RTO level.
As a matter of kind of wrapping up this conversation, Anya, I would love I think you've said it before, but tell people, when is this decision going to be made? How can they weigh in, and where can they find more information about this merger going on in DC?
So the public record closes on December 23rd. We welcome comments from anywhere and anyone. If you have analysis or an opinion to share, submit it to our Public Service Commission. It's easy. You can just send it with an email. There's not anything complicated. And you can do that right through the powerdc.org website, where we have tons of articles, testimony, videos, links, all about the merger.
Anya, thanks so much for joining me today. It was a great conversation.
Thanks, John. Nice to talk to you, as always.
That was Anya Schulman, Executive Director of the Community Power Network, talking to John Farrell, ILSR's Director of Democratic Energy. To submit comments on the takeover, or your experience with ComEd, Baltimore Gas and Electric, or any of Exelon's subsidiaries, visit powerdc.org and click on Take Action. More information about the takeover and a plethora of other solar policies and practices can be found on ilsr.org, where you can also find 28 more Local Energy Rules podcasts. Until next time, keep your energy local, and thanks for listening.